Hi, and welcome to Sped Homeschool Conversations. I'm Peggy Ployer, and this broadcast is sponsored by Sped Homeschool. And we are excited that you're here with us tonight, for those of you who are watching live, and for those of you who are watching this broadcast either on Facebook or on our YouTube channel, or if you're listening on our podcast. Special guest tonight is Wendy Dawson from Social Motion Skills. Welcome, Wendy.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here tonight.
This is wonderful, and just really happy to connect to all the SPED homeschoolers out there. You know, all you moms and dads who are able to do this for your children and really just devote your lives and your talents and transfer these competencies to your kids is really admirable, and probably kind of segues in really well to what we're going to be talking about tonight. So
yeah,
thank you.
Definitely. I know you're very much into, you know, getting mom and dad involved, and that's a lot what we're going to talk about tonight is just stuff that parents can do to make that transition better. Because there's a lot of stuff that we, if we don't do, it's not going to turn out very well, or they're never going to leave if they can, or they're not going to develop those skills with their staying in our house to the point that they really could. And so I'm excited about that because we sometimes either go overboard on these things or we don't do enough. And I think the information that you gave me ahead of time is so good, what we're going to talk about tonight. So definitely stay tuned for all this conversation. Wendy's got a lot to share. But before we get started on that, I just want you to talk a little bit about socialmotionskills.org, your organization, and what you do, and maybe some services that you have available that homeschool parents can dive into, whether they're in Houston, where you're located, or someplace else.
Right. Thank you so much. So let me just start by saying, you know, I appreciate all you moms so much because I am a mom. I was just telling Peggy a few minutes ago that I am the mom of a now 22-year-old young man who was diagnosed at two with PDD on the autism spectrum. And that really changed our lives. You know, he is my stepson. And, you know, I inherited this beautiful brown-eyed child and didn't quite really know what that meant or what that held for our lives. But I think it's really brought our family closer together. And in raising our subsequent children, it really has given us a different perspective and certainly enabled our, quote, neurotypical children to understand a world of giving and patience and sharing, and that everybody has talents and everybody's path is different, but particularly in this family unit, you know, as you all bond together as homeschoolers, and like you were saying, getting really close to your children, you really get to learn and see their differences and respect them. So that's kind of my story. And it was for my stepson, Cameron, that Social Motion was created, because I couldn't find the resources that we needed. And it kind of amazed me, in the city the size of Houston, one would think that we would have resources that we need, but I couldn't find them. And so we set about creating Social Motion, because that's what we needed. We had done therapy for many years. We had done PT, we'd done speech, we'd done OT. You know, therapists are still wonderful and absolutely necessary, but at some point we needed some social skill practice, you know, and it was like, okay, well, where do you go for that? Where, you know, we can find tutoring for baseball and singing and math lessons. Well, where do we go for tutoring for social skills? Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what started the whole idea of, we really need to bring this resource to the community. Yeah. That was in 2010. And, so, you know, we laugh because our team now has many moms on it, and we are all moms of these special kids. And so that transitional trust is really there. Mm-hmm. And my team will laugh. They come in all the time because I'm like, you're not going to believe what happened. We have to write a lesson on this. We have to, you know, help the world on this. And so it's where Mama Bear really meets business. And we hope, much like you in these podcasts and these live segments,
that's kind of how we function too.
We are a resource for the community.
That's awesome. Yeah, you have a lot of really good resources, including the virtual things that you're starting to do in parent training. And so definitely check out Wendy's website. And we'll make sure to to talk about it throughout, because you can kind of, you'll be pulling things in about what you do to help out parents if they feel like, you know, maybe I need a little bit of help in this area. So that'll be great.
We all need help, you know, and I think that's what, let me stress here before we even start, is parenting is just a process, and we are all people, and we are all moms, and we all, you know, we always assume the best out of all these moms. And whether you feel like you're doing a great job or not such a great job, you're doing the best job that you can. And we always assume that. And everybody needs extra information. We don't go to college for this stuff. And there's certainly no manual when you come for the special kids, like much less a regular manual book. But, you know, just kudos to all the moms out there who are tuned in tonight, who constantly seek and learn and devote themselves and love these children just absolutely beyond belief. So we are there to just to support you and give you credit for that.
And I do want to thank you for, if you're watching live, we have some viewers, and just know that you can put questions or comments into the feed at any time. I'm hoping that's working. I'll be watching my other screen because it has not sometimes. but if you do to add those in, we'll make sure that we build those into our conversation. So that's great. I love what it says on your website. It says practice makes life possible. And that really is what we're going to be, you know, the core of everything that you're going to be talking about, is that we don't get it right first time. It's a process.
Right.
And that's what builds those skills. So can you talk a little bit about the transferring process? What do you mean by transferring skills?
So it's kind of interesting because, you know, much like you, my child is in his 20s now. And I remember probably 15 years ago, I was sitting on a bus and we were going to a charity event for the kids. And I happened to sit next to this other mom who had an older child, like in late high school at the time. And she opened my eyes. It was like this window to the world of, you know what, these kids aren't going to grow out of this. And we really have to plan for their future and recognize their skills and talents and abilities as we go and have a realistic picture. Because the biggest pain point that we strive to solve is, what's going to happen to my child when I am no longer there to take care of them? Exactly. And so that is the knife in our gut that we all struggle with. And the reason that we teach the things that we do. And independence, this coming about of independence, is such a huge part of that, but it doesn't happen overnight. And so I really call it the transfer of competencies from that parent component to these children. And it's really no different than what we do in teaching our quote neurotypical kids or our other kids or the siblings, because think about when they're growing up, you're giving them chores. You push their bicycle down the street until they can do it themselves. You know, they start walking the dog before you let them go around the block by themselves. You start giving them little bits of money. Well, why don't we do that with our kids? Because all that little leash letting out is really formative, so that by the time they need to function as adults or maintain sufficiency on their own, they have the skills and they've had the practice. And so the big thing I really like to stress is it's a process that takes time. It's a process that has a different timeline for each individual, but it's really a transfer of these competencies in whatever form and fashion your child can handle, and what the parents continue to learn as they grow that these kiddos are going to need.
And you discover that along the way. It's not like you can just say, well, this is A through Z of everything my child needs to learn, and this is how long it's going to take for each of those. And, you know, there may be some things that, yes, they're really good at. And I love you have a free social skills survey on your website. That is a great resource for parents to be able to kind of just have a list and say, okay, these are some things that are going to trigger ideas in my mind about does my child need to work on this or not? Because some of it, I've found a lot of times that parents will compensate for their kids and not even realize right. they're doing it. And so surveys like that are really helpful to open our eyes to things we need to let go of too right. or teach. Because when you get to that point where maybe they do move out of the house and, you know, they need to have these skills, you don't want to have a panic attack. Did I miss something? I did that. So definitely.
Absolutely. So that was one of the first things we put up on the website was mm-hmm. this guide to not be a diagnostic tool by any means, but basically yeah. just an eye opener, like you mm-hmm. said, because so many people, they go to our website and they don't really know what we do because, well, what are social mm-hmm. skills? Well, what are social mm-hmm. skills? It's kind of hard to describe. But when you have that list of, I don't know, there's 35 questions there, you know, of mm-hmm. what your child is able to do always, sometimes, never. Mm-hmm. And if you're taking mm-hmm. these off, it's like, pause for thought. And then maybe yeah. that's when you go to mm-hmm. your pediatrician and you say, I have these questions, or you can talk to the other moms, or it helps you kind of categorize, you know, trust mm-hmm. your gut, moms. That gut is always right. It's the best diagnostic tool out there. Yeah. And so now yeah. you've got some verbiage and some mm-hmm. questions that wrap mm-hmm. around these issues that maybe you didn't have before that you can go get answers for.
Yeah, definitely. It is. And it's nice to have those words that, like you say, the verbiage for your child too, mm-hmm. because a disability of any kind is very vague, you know, and it's easy to kind of just lump everything in or not include it. And then it's kind of oblivious. But if you can say, these are the things that you struggle with. Right. And I know, especially as my adult children, talking with them, saying these are things that you just have to work harder on. Mm-hmm. And so they know that. And it isn't a disappointment when, yeah, I got to work harder on these things.
Yep. And so that's one of the points that I love to make. And mm-hmm. certainly with my son is that, you know, explaining to them that somebody always has to have your back, no matter who we are or what we're doing. My husband's got mm-hmm. my back on a tons of things. You know, my favorite trick is to exactly. leave the oven on and walk off. And I need, you know, reminders on that. And, you know, my other kids need help. And so, you know, we remind Cameron of that. And just because you ask for help or you set reminders in place, it doesn't make you weak. It doesn't make you stupid. It doesn't make you incompetent. It mm-hmm. simply means you're human and that you have strengths and talents in another area and that might not be yours. And there's nothing exactly. shameful or, you know, derogatory about asking for mm-hmm. help. And people actually appreciate it when yes. you're honest and loving with them and say, you mm-hmm. know what? I just don't get it, or I really need some support in this area.
Yeah, definitely. And it's good when your child knows this is just something that right. I need help with. And, right. And yeah, you being transparent to your child about your incompetencies mm-hmm. are so eye-opening to them, because oftentimes I know in my parents' generation, they hid them, you know? And so you had yeah. this persona that, you know, everything was perfect and lovely and, it's not. Yeah. I would always get real with my kids because they had some pretty hard struggles, and you don't want them to feel alone or that, you know, the world is against you.
Let me throw this in here. I think it's mm-hmm. really, really important that dads are able to do that too, because, yes. You know, prevalence rates as they are, 1 in 59 and 1 in 37 boys, these boys mm-hmm. need positive male role models as well. And yes. to say, you know, I'm not good at that, or I struggle with that, or, you know what, that's mm-hmm. really hard for me. Let's, you know, I need mom's help. And, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know how to do that. So let's go figure it out. I think it's really important. Yeah. And it builds up those self-esteem banks when these guys have mm-hmm. That role model that they can recognize that even their dad or, you know, another male role model needs help too.
Yes, that is so true. Yeah.
Now, that being said, one of the things that we really, really insist on in our kind of independence coaching is that your child is capable of more than you believe they are.
Oh,
and
so true.
So a lot of times it's really fun because we get the kids who come to our center or our outpost, and our teachers realize, and we're like, oh my gosh, this is such a great kid. And the parents are like, oh, they'll never be able to do that, or they've never done that. And we're like, why not? You know, and show them and teach them. Give them the chance to explore how much they can do, because you know what? These little, you know, make cupcakes with them. And if they burn the cupcakes, it's no big deal, because look what they've learned and look at the time that you've had. And those little challenges in life set them up for so much positive growth in terms of being able to cope later in life, being able to problem solve, being able to handle frustrations, being able, you know, a lot of times we get anxiety and OCD, you know, coexisting conditions. And it's like, it's okay. I can mess up the cupcakes and I'm still okay as a person. Nobody's going to get mad at me. I don't get fired. I don't get kicked out of the family.
Exactly. And those memories stay with them, that I made it through when I went, when I had that struggle, you know. And so when they face a new struggle, it, it becomes less of a mountain each time. Definitely.
And that's so important, because none of us, not even you, you wonderful homeschool mommies out there, can teach your kid everything. So we can go down scenarios, but really what you're teaching, the underlying lesson there, is how to solve problems and how to manage and how to cope, because they're going to, you know, these day and age, they're going to come into situations and scenarios that we never had, that we could never fathom. And people are doing, going to be doing different things in 10 years that, that we've never even heard of.
Yeah, and I think so, they said that 2/3 of the jobs that our kids will have don't even exist at this point.
Isn't that crazy?
So how do we train them for that? How do we train them for the social situations that they're going to be in? We can't.
That's right.
And so, like you said, we just, you know, teach what we can.
So we have these words, it's called learned helplessness. And I don't know if any of you look on our website, on the homepage, there's actually a timeline, and that graphic is there to show that we're actually offering services from elementary to tween to teen to young adults into adult living. And because we work with kids on this wide age group span, and we're mommies of kiddos in their 20s, it gives us the ability to look back. And I will tell you, the hardest thing that we have to combat when kids come to us and they're trying to learn skills is learned helplessness. If they've had 18 years or 20 years of not being trusted with any new task, of being told that they can't do it, of here, let me do that for you. Oh, no, you could never do that. They learn and they internalize that, oh, I could never do that. And so they're going to sit there and wait for somebody to do it for them. And reprogramming that sense of competency and initiative and motivation and willing to be step outside of the box and to do something a little bit creative is almost impossible to program by the time they get into their 20s and 30s if they have been taught for all these years that they are helpless. So no failure to launch on our watch. So transfer those competencies and teach your kids how to do it. I promise they're capable of more than you think they are.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And my kids got shoved in when we moved to a hobby farm on way more things than they thought they'd ever be competent to do. Just because they
had great exposure. That's such a great exposure, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And getting your children to volunteer, you know, even if it's something that you have to go along with and make sure that they can handle the social situation, it's so worth your time. It exposes them to different scenarios that you can't replicate in your own home.
That's right.
And so, and you can take skills that, you know, you learn through practice at home and then try them out. and
that's the best place to do it, because your kids get used to you. And especially if you're homeschooling all the time, they're around you. And like what you were saying, they get, you might understand their speech, or you understand what they want, or you know what their trigger buttons are, but they really have to become accustomed to the real world where that feedback is immediate. That feedback is not always nice. Not that they're going to get bullied, but embarrassing feedback hurts. You know, and they're going to get some of that when they're out there.
Yeah. So what, so What can parents do to help their kids be able to accept, you know, that some, the world isn't just not always a nice place.
No, and, it's not.
And people are not going to always do things that you want them to do. And especially for their tender hearts. I know, especially the kids on the spectrum, you know, my son is so sensitive. You wouldn't guess that because he's, you know, almost 6 feet tall and this big guy with long hair. but inside he's just like a teddy bear and, you know, he gets crushed so often. And so, you know, we've worked on those things, but what would be your advice to parents who know that their kids are highly sensitive to you know, the outside things, especially since if they've been homeschooled for a while, we do kind of shelter them. Yeah. But a lot of homeschool parents do involve their kids in a lot of things.
Yeah. So I would answer that with the thought that your disability or your diagnosis is an explanation. It is not an excuse. And I go back to that a lot because even with my son, it was, you can't get away with bad behavior. You can't get away with calling people's names. You cannot get away with, you know, turning around and walking off the playground. So it's an explanation for why you're feeling this way, but it's never an excuse not to do what you want to do. Never an excuse to quit, to give up. Now, in that, we have to nurture that self-esteem. And so that's why this positive peer modeling is really important. That's why, you know, taking them out to the community and really helping them understand how important they are in the family gives them that sense of self-esteem to go out. So another thing I would encourage is help them understand that they're a vital part of the operation of this family. They get chores like everybody else. They have to do their homework. They have to clean up. They have to help mom. They have to help their brother and sister. Whatever your other kids are doing or whatever the rules of the family are, they don't get opted out of that and accepted out. They're special in a different way, but they are not so special that they don't have to do dishes if everybody else does. You know?
You gotta use and that then, one.
So they're tender-hearted because they're not used to people's reaction to them. And if they understand that life is not fair, first of all, life is not fair.
Oh, and that was my mantra with my kids when they were younger.
They're strong within themselves because they are valuable people. And so if somebody's grumpy at them or rude to them, it is not about them. It's about that other person. It really is. Who's having a bad day on the playground? It's not me. I'm simply here enjoying my swing, or I'm enjoying, you know, my walk around the grocery store because I like to touch things or I like to look at things or repeat same words or anything. And it's like, you're not harming anything and you're being kind. So whoever is rude to you, you know, have a nice day, ma'am. Right. You know, I'm strong and confident in myself, and I know people love me and value me and cherish me for who I am. And that's it. It's all good.
Yeah. I heard it once that, you know, the more relationships that your child is in that confirm their identity from different viewpoints will actually solidify how they view themselves in the right context of who they are. Yeah. And so developing, you know, as many friends, family members who are willing to just pour into your child and help them to build that. Yeah.
So I love what you're saying. You know, life is not fair. Life is hard, and they have to do the work just like we all do. And again, coming back to that learned helplessness is, and I love the saying, by making it easy on them now, you make it harder on them later.
Oh, so true.
Because if they grow up again, not knowing how to cope, not ever having heard, you know, somebody rant in traffic or scream at them for whatever reason, it's really hard for them to accept and process that later in life. Mm-hmm. And so by think about that, parents, this is a really good one that we have posted is by making it too easy on them now, you actually make it harder for them later in life.
Lori just said, you're so inspiring, Wendy.
Hi, Lori. How are you?
So yes, definitely. I always said too that if my kids were failing, I'd rather have them fail in my house than somewhere else. And so pulling back a little bit more when they're in that safe zone,
yeah,
is a much better place than like kicking them out and saying, "We'll try that out there." And yeah, then it makes the recovery so much harder on them.
So it's really funny. I always tell our kids too, and tell the moms, teach your kids that things don't happen by magic. Guess what?
Oh,
food
doesn't
magically appear in the refrigerator. Those clean plums do not magically appear in your closet. You know, mm-hmm. like, how do you think the dishes got off the table into the sink? Things don't happen by magic. And so
right.
it's really a realization of these kids, you know, who maybe have processing disorders, who have, mm-hmm. you know, it's really hard for them to process the macro world with all of the sensory information that comes into them.
Yes.
But it's like, well, how do you think that happened? Or what do you think caused mm-hmm. that? Or
that's
even
great.
Second, what's going
questions.
To happen mm-hmm. down the line? Because it gives them power in the situation.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it really helps them start thinking about problem solving.
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely, mm-hmm. the home is the best place to start that. And just start those little, you know, tricks. And because I guarantee you, things are going to happen that they need to know. And this mm-hmm. follows along our line of thought of teaching independence is also helping them understand when they need to go and ask for help. Because
mm-hmm.
it's really hard if the default behavior is to do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I know there's a problem. I don't know what to do about it. I can't solve it. I'm not going to do anything about it. And it's miraculously going to take care of itself. Well, we
right.
all know that doesn't work. And a lot of times mm-hmm. the situation worsens. So we have this little kind of flow chart that we like to use.
Mm-hmm.
And so it helps them think in that process, I have a problem. First of all, you have to recognize, let them recognize I have a problem. And that's
mm-hmm.
a good first step.
Mm-hmm.
And then can I solve that problem myself or do I need help? It's a very
yeah.
simple yes
mm-hmm.
or no.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I can solve it myself, well, that's great. Go about your business. Try it. Try
right,
your best.
Exactly.
You might fail, like you said,
mm-hmm.
but you're usually at home or school or someplace safe. But
yep.
if you can't solve that yourself, then who's your go-to person? You know?
Right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And going to them and being able to say something doesn't work right, or, you know, things as simple as like, you know, my toilet is clogged up, or
mm-hmm.
the light bulb in my light doesn't work and they can't
mm-hmm.
figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are little trip ups in life that if we teach them to be able to mm-hmm. jump over early,
yeah.
we as parents are going to have a whole lot more confidence in giving them the wings that they need to leave
right.
our nest.
Mm-hmm.
One, we need them to leave our nest in some form or fashion because we are not always going to be there to take care of these kiddos. And
right.
two, they want it. They want a life.
They do,
you know?
Yes. So much so. And just to realize that they can do something that's of value. And whatever that is for that child, it forms a sense of purpose. And
yeah, absolutely.
They can make those decisions on their own. And it doesn't matter how many, like you said, how many supports they need.
Right.
But if they can realize that they need them themselves, that's a wonderful thing. I was just at a roadblock with my daughter the last couple days and with a problem, and she just couldn't figure it out until today. We started talking, and at the end of it, I said, "So do you realize that you're an auditory processor and that you needed to talk to somebody to get through your problem? That is something you're going to need to do the rest of your life."
Perfect.
And then
perfect.
I related it to a friend of mine who calls me all the time. She's not married. She's an auditory processor. So she has a list of friends
yeah.
that she calls when she needs to talk through something.
Yeah.
And that's okay. She doesn't have any disabilities, but she still needs those people in her
right.
life.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, relating it yeah, to something that your child can see, oh, you know, this doesn't make me weird. This is just life.
Right.
Definitely.
You know, and coming back to what you're saying, it's so important to involve those friends and other family members because
mm-hmm.
the ability to have peer feedback and then either not necessarily negative feedback or constructive criticism. You can call it whatever you want, or, you know, basically somebody who's saying that they're displeased with you or displeased with the job is huge growth potential. And so in raising our kids to be ready for independence, to transfer these competencies to them so that they can function and manage and have positive self-esteem in the real world, is they've got to be able to listen to what other people are telling them. And coming back to being nice, we never want them to be berated or yelled at or anything like that. That's not what I'm talking about. But there's always plenty of occasions where, you know, it comes into play more in the work stage of life, but your boss is not your parent.
Yeah. You know, they're going to tell it like it is.
They're going to tell it. And your coworkers are going to tell it. And if you ever decide you're not going to homeschool anymore and go back to a mainstream classroom, those peers, they can be really tough.
Yeah.
And so we talk a lot about the difference between bullying and embarrassing feedback. And there's a big difference there. We probably don't have time to go into that difference, but bullying is obviously, you know, definitely much more detrimental, both mentally, perhaps physically, but embarrassing feedback hurts, but it's not meant to bully your child. And oftentimes that is the peer feedback that they need to understand, that whatever they're doing may not be age appropriate anymore.
Right.
It could be that they've stated their case too many times, and it usually kind of comes down to social skills. And so if we can work through and help them really understand, what are they doing that's turning the other kids off and is giving this embarrassing feedback, a lot of times we can get to the roots of the issues that help them be more accepted.
Right. You're basically telling them this is going to fuel your growth, so you shouldn't be afraid of it.
Right. Absolutely. And it's hard. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's hard for all of us, even adults, in what we do. I mean, I feel bad if somebody, like, you know, stuck their tongue out or gave me a thumbs down on this, you know, but it's like, you can't please everybody, and they're not. So go with the people who love you and support you. And, you know, it's okay not to be perfect.
Yes. And that's something that I think our kids struggle with a lot. I know, especially my son on the autism spectrum, is perfection is his biggest nemesis. And, you know, where we're texting back and forth from college, just saying, it really is okay. If you did your best, that's your best. Right. And, they have to process that inside, as well as you telling them that.
I think it's really important for them to have a healthy self-esteem about their disability or their learning difference or whatever it is, because if they go off to college, you know, whether they verbalize it to their friends or not, or, you know, it's a big part of seeking independence, growing out of the home, moving into college, and knowing where and how to ask for the supports that they need. So for them to be able to go to the Office of Disabilities and either ask for the more time that they need, or written notes that the professors are going to use in class, because by the time they're starting to get into college or extended work, nobody really cares about them anymore. You know, we've nurtured them through loving homes and loving schools, and even oftentimes, you know, small little private schools, or if they're not homeschooled, there's a lot of these supports that we wrap around these kids. And it's so hard when all of a sudden that onion blows open and these layers and layers that we've built in aren't there anymore. So they have to be the layers now. They have to have that growth from inside. And no matter what people say to them or say about them, and that they can express themselves to get the supports that they need, is a huge part of that independence process.
Right. And it's the same thing for starting jobs too. You know, there's, unless your child has a helper that goes with them to this job that provides that support, you know, for them and is kind of initiates that, they really do have to know how to advocate for themselves.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about how you can teach your child to be their own self-advocate and, you know, better as as you start transferring, because the parent does so much of that advocacy for their child throughout their life. And yet at some point, you're not going to be there to do that for them.
Right. So that's a great question. And I love what you just said, is the parent does so much of it for them. So stop speaking for your child. First of all, hear their voice. Give them a chance to use their voice and make themselves heard and listen to what they're telling you. They'll tell you, do they like it? Do they not like it? And generally what they like is going to be because it's easier for them. Not saying that everything can be easier for them, but you'll know that something is going to work, you know? I'm just moving because I have to plug my computer in. But I think that advocacy right there starts at home, is listening to your child and then figuring out what tools work for them. We do a lot with visual schedules or writing down schedules or using planners, really figuring out, you know, how are they going to continue? Give me one second. Hold on.
I love what you said, that, you know, they'll take the easiest way out. I have 10 adopted siblings, and something that a lot of them, because some of them were older when they were adopted too, the easy way out, and especially a lot of them have fetal alcohol syndrome. So the easy way out was always the first choice.
Right.
And so getting them through the process of realizing that the easy way out is not always going to end up with the best results.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, that's another thing you have to work through in getting them to that.
So building up that self-esteem is a huge part of this advocacy, because if they are embarrassed to go to their teacher, if they're embarrassed to tell somebody how they're feeling or how that made them feel, they're never going to be able to do it. So I think, you know, hearing their voice and really listening to what they say, understanding, just like what you said, you were so adroitly pointed out, auditory learner or visual learner, because that is huge for them to know about themselves. We use a lot of assessments at Social Motion and some relational occupational assessments. And so it helps us figure out what types of jobs are going to be naturally suited. They need to know all this stuff about themselves so that they can advocate. And then what are their strengths? You know, my son is, when he gets frustrated and kind of bogged down, we get a letter. So it's much easier for him to process later, slower, when it's quieter, to be able to express himself in a way that he never, ever would be able to do verbally for us. And it's so meaningful when you get this letter the next morning. And so oftentimes, you know, the Office of Disability, if you're in school, or your counselors, or certainly the workforce nowadays has these supports built in. That's what we do with job coaches and our life coaches, and helping them to recognize what they need for themselves to be successful, and then having the confidence to go have a go-to person is huge.
Yeah, definitely. And talking about go-to persons, how would you tell parents that they can start building relationships for their children to help them build those skills with people outside of the family that, you know, at first it may be really scary, but to become more confident. And again, you know, we're talking about the transferring process, to be able to make those friends eventually on their own is our goal, you know, and to be able to make those connections and keep those connections.
So I love that question. Again, if you look at the timeline on our website, in the early stages, kind of the elementary years, we really start working on friendship. And so what are those building blocks of friendships? And so, you know, whether you come to Social Motion, do some research on social skills. Social thinking is out there. There's 5,000 books on the internet about early social skills. And while some of them might seem trite, those ideas really are, how do you become a good communicator? You know, verbal and nonverbal communication are really, really important, particularly at early ages, because even by like early ages, first grade, these kids are making immediate decisions about that was awkward. That made me feel weird. That creeped me out. They're too loud. Mm. And a lot of times they don't want to be with the kids that they don't understand or who are impulsive and who get in trouble.
Right.
And so when your kid can start learning at the very early ages, this is what we're working on. But for the parents really to have the knowledge of those beginning friendships blocks and those beginning behavior blocks, they're much more likely to be able to be included in circle time at school, sitting with the kids at lunch. And that's really where it starts. Right. Then find somebody that has a similar interest. If your kids like trains or dinosaurs or space or lollipops or, you know, whatever their love, Legos is a great thing. If they sing, it's a great thing. If they love art, like your son, you know, go find an art class. Find something in the community where your child will be accepted. Even if it's just a little 30-minute class or if you have to go for 10 minutes, talk to the teacher and say, you know what, I just want to introduce them to the space. Go early. Have them check it out. And maybe you have to go with them. But it's so important in those early years to find those hobbies and those interests and like-minded friends. Because we do it a lot with robotics and Legos because all of a sudden, you know, you put these little Legos in two kids' hands and they got a lot to talk about.
Exactly.
You know, things that never would happen. And then you can just moderate and facilitate and say, well, why don't y'all build a rocket? And then let their creativity flow and let them problem solve together.
Right. Yeah. And those common interests can bridge those barriers that the kids have. And they don't even know it. You know, like what you're doing is you're building the skills around that conversation that they don't even realize, you know, they're just talking about stuff that they agree on. And here you are, you know, working on the skills that will grow beyond that day's activity.
That's how we get the spinach and the brownies. Don't you know that?
Yeah. We do that too. Oh, there's a lot of things I've hid in my food for my kids. That's a whole other conversation. Talk about sensory issues and food. And you also had something on what you wanted to talk about is teaching them to be nice.
Right. So, you know, I think and I always kind of end these little topics on independence with teach them to be nice. So we've been doing a lot of work at our center lately on communication and understanding the power of your word. And this goes beyond just our kids and beyond parenting, but really understanding the power of the word in the community. And so who's speaking nicely to you? Who makes you feel good about yourself? And then the parents really modeling disapproval or versus positive buildup versus negative teardown, right? And so sometimes we have to tell our kids they're not doing things right, but it should all, or we need to, they have to do their homework or they have to do something. You know, it's, life is not Pollyanna and we have to get this stuff done, but it's really about do it with love in your heart and do it in a positive way. And the power of your word is huge. And our kids with language differences and processing disorders, they often don't understand that use of language. And so they parrot things back that are out of context or out of syntax and people don't understand them. But if you can teach them to be nice, what we've seen is everybody has patience with them. That people will have their back and everybody appreciates the vulnerability of this child. And like us, we have young adult children. They're not the cute little 4-year-old anymore.
Exactly. Their activities that they did when they were younger and they wouldn't be accepted now at in that body.
And these invisible disabilities are really hard for the general public to discern because they look handsome young men. Mm-hmm. And then they might not act or say things that people expect them to do. Right. And so I really come back to teach them to be nice and say, you know what? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry that I said that. And understand that the power of their word. Learn how to cope with those frustrations. You know, help them understand if they're in a difficult situation, you know, the tantrums and what they're yelling and what they're saying or what they're calling their friends or what the power of the word that comes out of their mouth is so important. Teach them to be nice. And it goes beyond just what they're saying. So we work a lot on graciousness because I promise you, these kids are all so loved. And at some deep level, they know that they're loved and how much they have been given all of their lives. And I promise they want to give back. So Thanksgiving, have them write a note of thanks. Have them at, you know, at the holiday season, write those cards that mean special somethings to people, just as those tokens of graciousness. It goes a long way.
Because oftentimes they get so tunnel focused on what they're doing. And those words don't come out, even though they do feel them inside. And so that's a great, great thing to remind parents. So, you know, if your child can't write, dictate for them, you know, or record it. If they're speaking, if they use a communication device, find some way for them to be able to do that.
Make a handmade card.
Oh, yeah.
An art class. Grandma, I love you. Big hearts. That grandma will understand what that child is saying. And that simple token of thanks and gratitude, even to a stranger, you know, hold the door for somebody, offer to carry a bag for somebody. I mean, it's teach them to be nice goes a long, long way.
It does. And then it shows them, too, when they're nice to others, it reciprocates.
Right.
So much easier.
Right.
Otherwise, you know, people can, and my son has this solemn look all the time. You know, you'd never know if he was happy or sad. He just always looks like that. We joke about all the pictures because he's just never smiling. But, you know, inside there, those emotions are there. And for them to be able to get them out and to share them is important, I think. And, you know, over time, I think if they do practice that, it'll become easier to show that. In other ways too,
but it's not small. You know, everybody has, so they're homeschooled, so they have a small circle of friends. So who are their homeschool friends? Or, you know, start practicing with the people that maybe they do hobbies with. Or, you know, we have found that places of faith are really good inclusive environments for our kids to be able to express gratitude, because everybody there, you know, is there for a higher purpose, and they should be accepted. And there's also generally a lot of activities that they will be welcome for. So whether it's choir activities or kids activities or, you know, little school stuff or field trips or something, start with those environments and just, it's like a ripple effect, you know? So your family's that nucleus, and then take that one step out, find out safe, loving places, and then hobbies and interests, because those hobbies and interests become the jobs, and those like-minded friends become the people who are going to support you.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I think we can get so focused on if our kids aren't excelling well in school that we just have to focus more on school. And I love what you said. Their hobbies are their jobs. And if you take those out of their lives, you have crushed that child all the more because that's what they're good at. And we have to celebrate those things in their lives because they struggle at everything else.
A lot of times it is their self-expression. So our friend Grant Manier, I don't know if you know him. He's an eco artist. And so he was diagnosed with autism and he would tear paper when he was little. Just that was his self-soothing activity. And everybody would tell his mom, you got to make him stop. You got to make him stop. And she's like, why am I doing that? That's the only thing that works. So fast forward, he learned how to put these torn bits of paper and make beautiful collage artwork out of them. And so now that's his livelihood, and he's an amazing artist. And so had that been squashed early on, not only his frustration, but he wouldn't have found his gift. So
exactly,
you know, we just try to temper you know, and help our kids understand maybe what is expected of them or what is going to help get them the desired reactions from people. But we love them and not trying to fix and change them, just help them understand how the world works, you know, through different eyes, and help them be able to cope and give them the tools that they need to be independent and sufficient as much as possible when they, as they grow up.
Exactly. Yep. And I love in your notes that you gave me is that you're never going to teach them everything, you know? And I just want, I really want to stress that as you know, I want you to talk a little bit about your website too, and all the things that are on there for our parents. But I remember when I graduated my son, I looked at him and said, "You can't go. I haven't taught you everything." And then I just, you know, I realized, well, I don't know everything. So I need to let you go. And there is a point where we just have to let go.
Yeah.
And they will continue to fail and we just need to be their safety net.
But mamas teach them what they need to know. Teach them how to cook the basics. Teach them how to keep themselves clean. Teach them how to take care of their health. Teach them how to wash clothes, teach them how to organize themselves so that they're not constantly losing things. Put these strategies in place for them and teach them, because then when they do have to go off, you know they're going to eat, you know they're going to be clean, you know they're going to have the clothes that they need, and they're not going to be so stressed out that they can't find it. So that you can teach them, those those building blocks and coping skills that you can teach them. And then you're right. They just have to use, they have to use the best you can give them for the rest of their lives.
Yes. And that's where we all started too. So it's, you know, we've survived. So Wendy, as we're closing, I definitely want you to talk a little bit more about socialmotionskills.org and just the services that our parents can tap into through your website. Definitely. So, and if you're local here in Houston, then even more so.
So it's just really an honor to have this occasion tonight to let everybody know what a resource we have. So we are locally based in Houston, Texas. We have a center, a training center located in the Spring Valley area. And we offer social skills and enrichment activities for primarily ages 8 to 28. Elementary social skills, tween social skills, teen social skills, where we bring in mentors from local high schools and services group. We have a young adult social night. We have a young professionals group. So a very vibrant after school program, and then a very active transition program. And that's why I talk so much about transferring this independence, because we see these kids as they are transitioning from the supports of school and home-based programs into the working world. Transition program. We actually run Aspire Accessories, which is an amazing micro enterprise. We actually employ 19 young adults on the autism spectrum. They have community, they have purpose, they have value. And if you look on the website, it says Shop Aspire, you actually can be part of their lives and support them in the work that they do by buying their amazing artistry, leather goods and home goods and crafts that they make. And then that's not good enough, because we are only based in Houston. So our push really is to be able to lift up these trainings and kind of this knowledge, what we've talked about. This, for example, this independence as a process would be one of the types of e-learning little videos or podcasts that are coming in the next year, so that we can further support parents no matter where they are. And we're going to be making virtual motion available for everybody and anybody, so that you can access our trainings. And it has the symbiotic parent trainings that go with them.
That is awesome. It's a such needed resource. I know parents have come to us, we've only been around for a year, but transition planning is huge. Yeah. And I've spoke on it at conferences, and you know, there's just not a whole lot of resources for parents that are parent involved ones. It's a lot of mermaid for the schools. And so to be able to get the family involved and to learn along with your child is so important. And I just love that about your program. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to come see your facility.
Come on.
Yes.
Everybody, you're welcome. We love to do site visits. info@socialmotionskills.org. Get you a site visit and you won't be sorry, I promise. And really, we have a lot for any age. And if anybody has a question, feel free to email me directly. And like I said, we are all moms in this together. And my new favorite phrase is teamwork makes the dream work. So we all have to support each other and be there together. So,
yeah. It's true for us as much as our kids and our organizations. You know, I'm learning that through the process of collaboration. It's we're not good by ourselves.
Right.
We need each other. So yeah, that's awesome. We have one more comment that I wanted to share, and Amy had said, and sometimes we have to accept imperfection in order to get the independence started and then refine the skill to higher standards. Yep. So true.
That's learning. Life is a process.
Mm-hmm. And nobody's perfect.
Nobody's perfect.
Well, this has been awesome. Thank you so much, Wendy, for this conversation. I hope that our viewers have enjoyed it as much as we have. And we just thank you all for joining us on this broadcast. The broadcast is funded in part by Learning Disabilities Foundation of America, and also by viewers like you who donate on our website or on our Facebook page. So thank you for watching. Let's keep the conversation going on the SPED Homeschool Support Group until next week. And next week, Dr. Ann Maria DeMars, who was here last week, is coming back from Seven Generation Games. And we're going to talk about activities and strategies for teaching gifted children. So that's going to be very fun. She is a riot. It's going to be another great broadcast. But until then, have a great week and we'll see you later. Bye.